RN, your daily commute companion.
Hello, Natasha Mitchell joining you now on RN. We're going DIY today for our Life Matters Friday talkback for the next hour. Not the kind of DIY you're thinking of, though. Earlier this week, we spoke about community undertakings in Port Kembla in New South Wales. They're a community group who are challenging the corporatisation of funerals by trying to run their very own, to make funerals more affordable, more meaningful, but most of all, more personal. And the story of their quest screens this Sunday night at 20 past 10 on ABC One in a doco called Tender. Now, their idea got us all thinking about all sorts of self-made rituals and ceremonies that people create or reinvent, sometimes radically reinvent, like weddings and funerals and births and deaths and Christmas. Perhaps you're marking this weekend's winter solstice in your own unique way. Have you reinvented or reclaimed or retrofitted a traditional ritual to better suit you? Tell us what you did. And what was the response, especially from your family? Did it upset them, or did they eventually come around? Or perhaps you've come up with a whole new ritual of your own, one that's totally unique to your family or your circle of friends. Love to hear about your self-made rituals or ceremonies today, and the calls are coming in already. 1300 22 55 76 is the number to call. 1300 call RN. If you're in South Australia and the Northern Territory, get on the blower right now. If you're in WA, you might want to try our listener line instead, 02 833 1430. And of course, you can SMS us 0418 226 576. All that information's on our website, and we're on Twitter. Tweet us at RN Life Matters. Now, across the hour, we'll be joined by parenting educator Maggie Dent. Football fanatic Lloyd Hart is going to be joining us later on, hopefully, from Brazil. But first up, let me introduce Dally Messenger. He is a civil celebrant, one of the first civil celebrants, in fact, to be registered in Australia back in 74. 40 years later, still going strong. Over the decades, he's certainly seen a lot of change when it comes to how we celebrate and commemorate significant milestones in our lives. Good morning, Dally.
Good morning, Natasha.
What's at the heart of rituals and ceremonies, do you think? Is this a fundamental human need?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously everyone that's involved in any enterprise thinks their enterprise important. I think rituals, rites of passage, ceremonies are kind of totally fundamental to our culture. Actually, that, you know, that you describe the cultural infrastructure in terms of ceremonies and what you do on certain occasions. And I honestly think there's too many people out there that undervalue the importance of it. Because what we're really talking about at its deepest level is the pursuit of happiness, our own sense of identity, our own sense of security, our sense of esteem and so on.
Is it happiness or is it meaning?
How can you be happy without meaning? Well, both, obviously. And you give meaning to your life, and you give by kind of absorbing the truths that make you a more satisfied person. And what we do in a ceremony, of course, is we construct something that's going to feed into our subconscious, so it affects all our future behaviour and all our future thinking about ourselves.
Certainly, though, Dally, we've seen a move away to an extent from religious ritual in a country like Australia to secular rituals. I mean, over 20% of Australians now put no religion on the census. Has that corresponded to a decline in formal traditional rituals? Is this a sort of push towards the DIY ritual, perhaps?
Oh, totally. I mean, the decline in church attendance has been quite dramatic. And that's why Lionel Murphy started us off. It was to develop, from the beginning, rituals for secular people. That's why we were...
And started off the civil celebrant movement.
Yeah, that was the whole purpose of it. Innovative rituals that were personal and that suited people of no religion. And people, you know, you were kind enough to say I've been around for 40 years. But when we started, there was nothing. We had to invent our own stuff for funerals. We had to invent for weddings and develop it. And I think we've, you know, up until 2003, anyway, we did a marvellous job. We had a core of about 1,000 celebrants who really were on to developing rituals, rites of passage and ceremonies for secular people.
But I just want to come back to the heart of what ritual represents for us. What it achieves for us to build a ceremony together or a ritual together. Perhaps you can give us some examples.
Well, every ceremony that we have, every ritual that we develop is to make us more aware of a truth or to communicate it. I mean, the main purpose of ceremony is to seriously communicate. To seriously communicate love, to seriously communicate appreciation, to seriously communicate recognition, say, you know, in the Nobel Peace Prizes or Logies and so on, to seriously communicate apology, say, like when Kevin Rudd kind of devised the sorry ceremony and so on. It's to communicate at a very serious level. And that... To me, that's its main purpose. It's got, you know, ceremony and ritual have other purposes. Society, actually, for thousands of years, has expressed, reinforced, transmitted values in ceremony, what we believe, what we want to believe, what we want to emphasise, what we want to remind ourselves of. To me, that's the purpose.
That's a great point, the transmission of values through ceremony. Let me just read a lovely comment that's come in on our Facebook page. Stella says, last weekend my family celebrated my dad's 100th birthday. Dad died 15 years ago, but I wanted to make sure that the children and their children didn't forget him. So I organised a picnic at his favourite beach. We had a cake, we sang happy birthday and ate his favourite foods. The kids had a great time playing in the rock pools and running around, and the grown-ups had a good catch-up with each other. We're going to do this again next year for my mother's 100th. The family really enjoyed this unusual but happy ritual of remembering a much-loved father and grandfather. 15 years on, there you go. It's the Friday Life Matters Talkback. We are talking about self-made ceremonies today. DIY rituals. What traditional rituals, like weddings or funerals or graduations or birthdays or naming ceremonies perhaps the winter solstice, what rituals have you reinvented or reclaimed as your own? We'd love to hear your stories. Perhaps you've come up with a whole new ritual. We'd love to hear that too. And also some of the tensions within families around this. Have you kind of pushed away from a traditional ritual that your family embraced but you don't want to do anymore? 1300 225 56 1300. Call RN. SMS us on 0418 226 576. Yia in New South Wales. Good morning to you. You're a ceremonial choreographer. What's that?
Yes, I design ceremonies to suit wherever a client or group is at a particular moment. Also. So they're not all fixed. They're depending on the needs of the person. So then I don't try and, you know, indoctrinate anyone into anything, just depending on what stage they're up to.
So last night was an interesting occasion, I hear.
Yes. Last night was really beautiful. We held our 14th winter solstice spiral walk here. As a woman-only event. It's been a woman-only event for the past 2 years. Mainly because I want to support the women in our local community to be able to share and express at a deeper level, which they can do when it is a woman-only event.
So what did you do?
Well, what we did at first, we just cast our mind back over the year that was and had a reflection of the lessons learnt during that time. And... Just then thought of all the wishes and dreams we want to, and projects that we want to give birth to in this new season with the coming of the light. And then we went down and we have pine cones that fall off our beautiful pine trees here. Everyone takes a pine cone and just releases that in the fire with a few words of what they want to let go of and say goodbye to the year that was and the lessons learned, and then they step into this spiral that's been created with flowers, and in the center is a candle which represents the growing of the light.
Gosh.
And the wishes and the dreams of the person that journeys in.
This all happened last night.
This happened last night, and everybody gets sung as they come out, and then people get an opportunity to sort of name what it is they want to bring through, what some exciting projects women have, and we mirror back to each other and make a commitment to support everyone to manifest these wishes and dreams, which are very diverse, from things like permaculture, nursery, to magazines that women want to create. So it is a wonderful way of this ritual process actually names.
We've had a tweet from David. He writes, "When our daughter reached puberty, we welcomed her to the world of womanhood by marking this with a celebratory family meal. Now, I gather that you also do menopause and also start of puberty rituals. What do you do in a start of puberty ritual? Because that could be potentially excruciating for the young person, frankly."
Well, hopefully we get in with the girls early so that then they don't already have this, when they get into the mid-teens, it's a little bit harder. But when they're young and it's brought to them in a community of very loving women that, it's less excruciating. But the ritual part is really beautiful. They get validated by every woman in the ceremony, and candles are lit for the girl, and blessings are made. So the girl steps into a dish of sand, leaving footprints, and people put their candles in their footprints.
Why are you doing it?
I'm doing it to empower the girls and women to understand the power of their cyclic life. And as, young women are, have to go through all those journeys, of peer pressure, anorexia, all that stuff where there's lack of validation of who they truly are with their own wishes, dreams and aspirations. And being in a circle of women and being supported gives them an opportunity to make that journey more confidently.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. I have to say, and this is not to diminish anything of what you're saying, but there's a kind of meme doing the rounds on the internet at the moment. It's actually an ad for menstrual products for young girls. And the girl lies and says that she's got her period. The mum goes, "Yes, let's have a party." And she creates this phenomenal party where, the father jumps out of a fake uterus. And I mean, it's just hysterical. And you must try and see it.
I will try and see it.
And the girl ends up cancelling the entire ceremony and says that she lied. Anyway, it's a classic. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Emma in Tasmania, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us on Life Matters.
Good morning.
You've actually created rituals to mark some very tough experiences in your life.
Yeah, I have rituals of provided a process and given me something concrete, and they've been symbolic, and I've used them for myself and my family for a long time. We do have a puberty cake when the girls hit puberty, and we don't have grace, as I grew up having in a Catholic family. We just thank the universe and who grew the food and made it, and so we've sort of always done that. And I was having a bit of a battle coming to terms with a couple of things in my past, and in my 20s, I'm in my 40s now, but in my 20s I decided that I'd had a termination when I was 19, and I didn't seem to be able to get any peace around it, so I was still grieving, and it was sitting with me every day, and I just felt this real sadness. So I decided to create some sort of ritual around it, and it took me about 6 months to come up with it. And then,
what did you come up with to really?
I'd never bought myself roses before, and I bought myself a big bunch of soft baby pink roses, and I hung them upside down in my house and just on our coat rack and just watched them dry over the week. So that was part of the ritual, really, watching it die, the flowers die. And then I took them to my local ceremony. Cemetery, and went to a pond near where a lot of my family members in the past have been buried, and I pulled all the petals off quite slowly and just threw them all over the pond and, as you can imagine, cried and just felt this enormous letting go. And now if I ever think about it, which I do, of course, you know, it just, and it's usually now if it's something on the radio about it or, you know, I know of someone else who's had one, then I do feel a sadness, but I just see all those petals and I can let it go really quickly. So it's very healing.
That act of creating a ritual, a self-made ritual, allowed you to connect differently to that memory.
Yeah, and it was very visual. And I think for me, I'm an artist and visual rituals, you know, rituals tend to be visual and it was a good thing for me. Yeah.
Gee.
And the other thing I did was I had a past of sexual abuse from a Catholic priest at my school, and I'd sort of grown up with that, a very violent period of abuse that went on for years, and I was having some counselling with this wonderful, wise sexual assault organisation state counsellor in Tassie, and I was talking to her about how even though the priest is dead now, I kept seeing him around the corners and in the supermarket and, you know, I was functioning completely normally. People, my family don't even know about it. You know, it's a very private thing for me.
But and he was ever present in your mind.
Always.
So what did you do?
So what I did was my counsellor suggested visiting his grave and said that I could create my own ritual around that if I wanted. So and she said sometimes if people see the grave, it helps them to realise the person is dead and then the fear sort of goes. So I made a little cardboard box that I knew would disintegrate with the weather, and I wrote a letter to him and I shredded it to tiny little bits so no one could ever read it inside it. And I just put some things that meant things to me, like a crystal and a special sort of jagged rock and a little bottle brush to represent all the other people that had no doubt been abused by him. And we drove there, and it was a couple of hours away from where I live, so the drive was part of the ritual too, I suppose. You know, just it was very peaceful. And anyway, when we got there, it was really nerve-wracking to go to the grave, and I had
also
to sit a bit lower than the grave for a while, but luckily the gravesite looked over the ocean. So it had a beautiful, it was a beautiful cemetery, which helped. And yeah, we walked up to the grave when I was ready. There was no pressure. There was, if I wanted to get back in the car and go home, I could, you know. And then I put the cardboard box there and I actually collapsed. My legs just went from under me and I cried and yeah.
Well done you. Gosh.
And it really helped. I don't see him anymore. I see him in my dreams sometimes, but I don't see him around the corner. I know he's dead. Yeah.
What a strong soul you are to create those rituals to allow you to really rewrite some of those historical experiences. Well done, Emma. What a stunning call to get this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Now take yourself and have a quiet cup of tea, will you?
Yeah. I will, definitely.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and maybe Dally might like to add a comment here at this point, listening to this story.
I do, actually, because when we started as celebrants, there were some wonderful women celebrants. This was a time when premature births, stillbirths, in this case grief after an abortion, there was no ceremony at all. And people lived with this grief of a child that wasn't named and so on. One of our wonderful celebrants, a woman called Diane Story, innovated, you know, this took on 30 years ago now, and it's carried on every year, where babies are named and they have a funeral service, and they're memorised, and the whole, I'm just listening to your caller then, the whole purpose the whole purpose of the ceremony is to trigger a kind of process of grief that makes the person adjust to normal life again. And she just triggered that memory in me that this was one of the innovations that civil celebrants brought in, and it's so helped so many people.
Yes. Emma, thank you so much for taking the time to call us today. Really terrific. We might have lost you on the line now. That was Emma in Tassie. It's the Friday Life Matters Talkback, and as you can hear, we are talking about the role of ritual in our lives, the role of ceremony. But what we particularly want to hear from you about today are self-made or DIY ceremonies. Perhaps you've reinvented or radically retrofitted a traditional ceremony of some kind. Perhaps you've walked away from a traditional ceremony that was very important to your family and created your own. Perhaps that created some tensions. Christmas, weddings, complicated, aren't they? They mean a lot to us, but sometimes we have to make them our own. And certainly the winter solstice on our doorstep this weekend is one way that many people create some sense of ceremony. 1300 225 76 1300, call RN, and also text us 0418 226 576. If you're in WA, our listener line 0283 1430. Sophie's just tweeted, wow, tears in my eyes after that abuse ritual story. So brave and so moving. Well, let me bring in our second guest, parenting educator Maggie Dent, because of course so many of these self-made rituals emerge out of the family experience of ritual, and perhaps you've reinvented your own rituals as a family or made them up from scratch. Maggie has had many years' experience working with families to support them to raise resilient children, especially, as well as raising four boys of her own. She's based in Perth, but she joins us in regional New South Wales this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And I am a celebrant of almost 20 years as well, so I share Dali's passion for ceremony. And I loved what that beautiful story of the...
Emma.
Because she talks about when we can create some form of symbolic representation of the transition we are seeking. And that is why so often, you know, the circle is so powerful, whether it's a wedding ring or it's a sacred circle on the earth made of shells or flowers. We are wired as humans in our deep psyche for symbolism and metaphor. And it's not always, you know, that's why, you know, when we have people who make creative ceremonies that allow us to move from a place to another place, whether we're becoming single to married or we've lost a loved one, it's, you know, they are incredibly powerful.
Mm.
And one of the reasons why, and that's why when I'm working with families, and I keep suggesting to them, work on building memories that matter, because the brain is an interesting thing and it wires memories according to the depth of emotion or the innate symbolism, so the archetypes go in. So that's why they are helpful that we have these mini rituals, even just having rituals for children when you come home and when you leave are incredibly powerful at building a sense of belonging and that I'm, you know, that we matter, and it's familiar, but it also anchors better into the mind.
Mm, it's actually the process of creating a ceremony that probably as powerful as the ceremony itself, especially as you say, if people are developing their own symbolic processes or metaphors, etc. It's and that creative act.
It is, and very much around death, because, you know, the biggest, I've done, worked a lot, palliative care and funeral industries and things, so I have worked really, really closely in this area, and the grieving process is very personalised for absolutely every person, and sometimes what we create are mini activities that allow a person to feel still connected, which is exactly what that 100th birthday did.
Mm.
So rather than let that special person disappear, let's continue celebrating who they are. Let's share their stories. Let's come together, because, you know, that's the sort of ritual you have that empowers us deeper and within ourselves. It's not all bad that we had this beautiful person in our lives. So I encourage those things that in families, not just, we love, you know, we do know that we build rituals around meal times, but if we don't eat a round table, so we've got to remember that so many rituals have food at the centre of them. You know, Christmases and Easters and gatherings and barbecues and campsites. And there's that great power of the campfire. Do you know, it may not be a specific thing, but when we gather around it, it draws us into a different way of being. And that's what one of the things we keep on, you know, sort of saying, let's get out of our modern world and our technology And it's about human connectedness that we want to build with our rituals.
Although there's a certain degree of human connectedness happening on that technology.
Actually, it is, but not so much ritualistic and not so much archetypal.
Well, I think you do have some concerns that there aren't enough rituals happening in our family lives. I have to ask, though, before we consider some of the creative possibilities that you suggest to families, ritual can also be a burden. Or a yoke around our necks within families. And that's part of why people push back with their own self-made or DIY rituals.
Oh, golly, especially for adolescents, you know, because, of course, anything that we think is a great idea and something we've done before all of a sudden doesn't look quite so good. You're absolutely right.
And they lack imagination in families too. We've always done it like this and we will continue to do it forever.
I like it when they accidentally kind of appear out of somewhere where you do something accidentally, everyone says, wasn't that cool, let's do that again.
Yeah,
I love those ones, and I love that comes from the kids as well as the parents. And I had a family live next door to me at one point, and the two little girls used to go down the back of the yard with their little fairy outfits and drop breadcrumbs for the fairies at the bottom of the garden around a beautiful bird bath. And I could see through the fence, it had, you know, little, like, timber spacings, and every single night they did this with great joy and delight, and the dog would come down 10 minutes later and eat them all. And I just, you know, Mum and Dad knew what was going on. I just loved that. Every day it made my heart sing. So sometimes they can be little things and not great big things about just birthdays. What do we do at birthdays? What are our Christmas rituals? However, I think what's really beautiful is when, because mums and dads come from different families, different stories, is that we sit down and have a really big conversation about which ones of yours shall we continue?
Well, that's the retrofitting process, isn't it?
It is.
Especially if you come from radically different cultures or
Absolutely.
Different religious backgrounds, you really have to
Absolutely.
Rethink
yes.
what you're going to do together as a self-made
exactly.
community.
And anything that becomes a forced ritual isn't going to be creating the memories that you would kind of want deep in the psyche.
Now, I'm just thinking about those two little girls that you watched mm-hmm. travel down to the back mm-hmm. of the garden with the petals or the what was it, breadcrumbs. And let's bring in Leonie into the conversation from New South Wales, because, Leonie, I think you developed a Sister's Day.
We have, yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, my mother and her sister, of course, are two sisters. My mother had two daughters, I had two daughters, and our family's full of sisters. So we decided to celebrate being a sister, and something simple. I think our first one was at Botanic Gardens, and we had a picnic. And, of course, the next one we had honorary sisters who wanted to join in, so it got a little out of control, but we had lots of fun, and we continue to have them.
So how did you make it specifically a ceremony? Were there particular things that you did, or was it a gathering of with a particular, you know, theme?
It was, the theme was celebrating being a sister and how special it was. And we have friends who don't have a sister, and they like being a sister. So this was an opportunity to celebrate what we had, which was being special, being a sister. Mm. And it was very simple, sharing food, usually sitting on the ground, which is always good. And, of course, as the sister had more children, we had to sort of expand out, and parks were always great because the kids could run around and have fun. Mm. But just something simple and celebrate and enjoy being
That's great.
A sister.
Thanks, Leonie. Sister's Day.
Can I add something?
Yes, Dally Messenger.
A very important, like in my own wedding ceremony, my daughters, my wife's daughter, were part of the ceremony, and the sisters bonded in the sense they all embraced one another. They all sang us a song together. And so it's one of the big challenges, I think, and happy challenges, not just natural sisters, it's stepsisters and stepchildren coming together and creating that bond. Mm. Like the 100 years, I think that was marvellous, because one of the purposes of ceremony that I didn't mention before when you asked me was bonding, establishing relationships. You know, in a family reunion, my own family reunion, for example, I met cousins I didn't know, and now I kind of relate to them, I have them on Facebook, etc., etc. And that particular style of ceremony establishes relationships and strengthens existing relationships, which is a wonderful purpose of these rituals.
Yes, indeed. Sometimes we just fall back on genetic heritage, but sometimes you actually have to really make that glue happen, and ceremony can help with that. Maggie Dent, I think you've been chiming in.
Oh, look, I'd really like to comment on those sort of the ones that have been changing and evolving, sometimes not in a healthy direction. And we know the rites of passage of leaving high school. Even though schools do have graduation nights and, you know, those sorts of things and dinners and farewells, and I know the schools of faith often have retreats, which I'm hugely supportive of because it's a really powerful reminder you're about to leave this stage of life and go into the other. But our modern world has kind of caught, you know, allowed or what has happened with leavers or schoolies or whatever you like. And we've watched that sort of powerlessly thinking, oh, gosh, we can understand what it's about a bit, but it's kind of got out of hand. But there's a shift happening with very wise young people who've decided that's actually not how they want to mark that part. And some of them now are gathering together, taking themselves off to Cambodia and helping out in orphanages, or they're going on a camping trip with just their best friends with no alcohol. So that yearning to mark that and that personalising is about doing it with people who are significant in your life.
And yes, indeed.
They will merge and evolve, and it's beautiful to know there are other options out there for that. That's a powerful rite of passage, that one.
So we'd love to hear from you if you have marked schoolies in your own unique way. There's a particular type of self-made ceremony or DIY ritual. Give us a call, 1300 225 56. We're talking about weddings, parties, births, deaths, all that, and how you've radically reinvented or just retrofitted traditional rituals. 1300 225 56. Read out a few text messages that are coming in. Claire writes, I'm enjoying listening to the program on a long drive. Thank you. It's reminded me that tomorrow is the 13th anniversary of me having life-saving surgery. I've never felt it valid to treat this moment with significance, but perhaps now I will. Do that, Claire. In fact, we'll just dedicate this entire show to that 13th anniversary for you today. And also someone's texted, we did naming ceremonies for our two kids, which was different to the christenings that the rest of the family did with their kids. It was important that this celebration was meaningful to us, as the religious one had no meaning. For my daughter, we had all the family and friends who came bring a bead, which was strung on a necklace, and they wrote a wish in a book for her. For my son, we made prayer flags, which everyone wrote on and strung together and then put up at each birthday. And they get put up at each birthday. And that's from Karen on the Sunshine Coast. Fantastic. Perhaps you've kind of reinvented the traditional christening for your child. Give us a call about that as well. Melissa in Victoria, good morning.
Hello.
You have a dinner ritual.
We do. We all sit down at the table, me and my children, and we say something that we're grateful for. We hold hands, so kind of we all wait together until everyone's down, and then we go around the table saying one thing that we're grateful for the day. It's really nice.
What sort of things come up?
Usually, whoever it is who's cooked dinner, the person you go first usually says, I'm grateful for so-and-so for cooking dinner. And then my children might say, I'm grateful for a particular thing that they did at school, or a nice thing from a friend, or the heating, having a warm house, or the internet. Just all sorts of random things.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yes. Grateful for Life Matters. Just, and it's a really beautiful way of like making sure everybody's kind of present at the table and changing the way you think about the day, I guess, and focusing on the good stuff.
Yeah. Melissa, thanks for the call. And let me come to Maggie Dent on that, because there you go. There's the basic sitting around a table dinner, but they've actually added an element of ceremony.
It's just so beautiful because and the more they do it, and plus it's a positive, you know, we're looking at those things. We want our children to have that sort of a focus. So they've woven the direction of parenting in amongst the ritual, and I love that. And that's why one of the things I keep saying sometimes, if it's a nice afternoon, why don't we eat on the back lawn on a picnic rug? Because picnics are another one of those things. And I don't know, you know, one of the things I love, if my lads aren't around for Mother's Day and Father's Day and all those sorts of things, I head to the nearest largest park, because what I see is families everywhere coming for picnics together, and it just does my heart enormous good.
That's not a ritual, though, is it?
It is. It is in a way. If we do that regularly, that's when we meet. We gather them all together for a picnic because we're gathering around food. We're making it a special event. It anchors more memories about us belonging, as what Dali said a while ago. It's the belonging of us together that we're anchoring. So it is a form of ritual, yes.
Mm. Mm. What about, though, when rituals can cause a burden in a family? Where people, as they become adults, kind of want to push away and out of the burden of the rituals that the families have always done. What sort of tensions can that create?
Look, it does create enormous tensions in families because we all have our perceptions of what's right and wrong. And I know the biggest challenge, I think, is in the modern parenting dynamic is there is so much other possibilities out there that they're available to. So if we've got more traditional values, and it's the same as that, those moving away from religious traditional markers and things, and the grandparents really finding that this isn't going to work and this isn't going to be okay, you know, this isn't acceptable, this is how we do it. And I once did a naming ceremony for a lovely little child, and the mum and dad were very, very, very staunch Catholics, and they were really quite angry that, you know, that the good Lord wasn't going to be there and it wasn't going to be acceptable. But they'd never been to one that was quite so created by this beautiful mum and dad and who they'd invited in and how they had beautiful symbolism, very much like what has already been shared. And so the ceremony was actually so much more personalised, and the dad did come up to me later and said, oh, look, I owe you an apology because I found that deeply moving and deeply meaningful, and I needed to see that so that I could see that my way, you know, it's just one way.
Mm. Let's take a call from Hannah in Victoria, beg your pardon, because you have a point about traditional rituals.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not going to tell you which traditional ritual it is, Natasha.
Mm.
You can work it out for yourself.
I might not be able to, though.
Oh, I think I have great faith in you, Natasha.
I don't come from a great ritualised family, I have to tell you.
That's okay. Now, just now, I'm getting ready for the ritual, I'm cooking, and I'm getting ready for the Sabbath, for Shabbat. So you probably worked it out already. So so I'm talking about the rituals that really make me a person, you know, and I'd like to stand up for all the religious rituals, because honestly, without them, I don't know where we'd be. Now, I just wanted to say that you know, without the Sabbath, without that 24 hours, I don't know where I'd be. So I have to cook before. So every Friday is a ritual. Yesterday was the yard site, which means the anniversary of the death of my own sister. It's the 18th anniversary. So I wanted to tell you that and how comforting it is to have those rituals. We go into the synagogue and we say special prayers, and we have a l'chaim to life.
Mm.
So even though this may be said, oh, it's so sad, no, it's not. Even after 18 years, I have to tell you, it doesn't get any better. She was only 47 when she passed away of cancer. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It brings us all together.
Mm.
It's very binding, and I haven't made anything different, and I never want to make anything different from the Orthodox Jewish ritual.
Mm. And it honours that sadness too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrific call. Dali Messenger.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. I think the Jewish culture has a lot to offer us. And I've got friends who are religious Jews, and I have friends who are secular Jews. They don't believe in God, totally renounced, but they all observe the same rituals. They fast on Yom Kippur, and they celebrate Shabbat and so on. But what hits me is that they're the example for adolescents. I mean, you never read a book written by a Jew that doesn't mention their bar mitzvah or their bat mitzvah, and it's such an enormously meaningful event that makes them feel part of their community and their family and so on. And, you know, we had 70 celebrants together at one stage trying to launch a secular bar mitzvah, but unfortunately, we were frustrated in quite a number of ways. The problem, basic problem, being that celebrants have to earn a living. They've got to put food on the table, and even though lots of parents of teenagers wanted us to develop this, no one was willing to pay for it. I just thought I'd mention that.
Well, it's the Friday Life Matters Talkback. Joining me is Dally Messenger, a civil celebrant of many years. Also, Maggie Dent, who also spent many years as a civil celebrant. She's a parenting educator these days, of course. And we're talking about the role of, and let me pronounce it correctly because a few of you have called apparently, ceremony. There you go. Not the ceremony that I'm prone to saying. We're talking about DIY ceremonies or DIY or retrofitted rituals. And how have you created your own rituals from the ground up? And thanks, Amanda. Inspirational show this morning, she says. And Genevieve from Wagga says, could we have a program on men's and boys' rites of passage rituals in Australia, please? Well, perhaps you'd like to call in about that. Perhaps you've actually created a ritual or a rite of passage for a man or a boy. Perhaps you've had that experience yourself. We'd love to hear from you. 1300 225 76. Hillary in Canberra, good morning to you. This is a great kind of example of cross-cultural rituals.
Yes. My husband died of cancer 4.5 years ago, and it was a fairly 7 months between diagnosis and death, and we had been in Denmark just prior to his diagnosis. So when he died, his relatives and friends in Denmark, of course, were just as much in grief and shock as we were. And I had the opportunity because he said to me, look, I've lived half my life in Australia and I'd like half my ashes back in Denmark. So it was a little bit of an organisation, but I managed to take them back to Denmark to arrange a very traditional Danish lunch for all his friends and relatives and to put the ashes in a family plot at a little village in Denmark. And I think that for everybody, including myself, especially myself, it was a great way of putting a line under a very, a sad event.
So it helped you and it honoured that legacy, that request that he wanted.
Yes, it did. It did. And I think it was a real healing process for his friends and relatives.
Well, terrific. Well done for realising that. Thank you, Hilary. Maggie Dent.
There is some beautiful work happening out there with transitioning boys to manhood. Dr. Rubenstein up in Mullumbimby does it, and also Andrew Lyons runs The Right Journey. And these are now programs that are coming into some of our high schools, acknowledging that boys are in this transition journey, and it's really making such profound, significant differences to boys who can get very lost on the journey to manhood in a modern world with very mixed messages about how to be a man. And I think this is one of the most significant shifts in a positive direction. And in a way, isn't it like a move backwards? Because this is something that, as you know, the Jewish faith has done it, but traditional communities have always done it. And our own, you know, First Nations people here in Australia, the rites of passage to manhood and womanhood are very profoundly led and deserved and guided. And I think really that's where we've kind of lost the plot a little, because that journey, and when we are ready, it's not always an age. It is an awareness and a maturity, and you know, and that guidance and that mentoring and that stewardship. I think we kind of think they're just going to get there now, but I really believe that that is a really profound shift if anyone can follow up on that. They're a bit worried about their young lad on that journey to manhood. There is some excellent stuff happening in Australia.
So we might hear from Neil in New South Wales at this very point, because you'd like to talk about boys and rites of passage. What do you do?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good morning.
I've worked on camps called Raising Men and Pathways to Manhood and Men to Be, and they're all happening in northern New South Wales, southeast Queensland. I'm working as actually the cook.
Yep.
But I get
important, fundamental role in a ceremony.
Absolutely. But I get a kitchen eye view of the men and boys as they come in, and the difference is marked each day. But basically it's helping boys between the age of 12 and 15 mark the passage from child to young man, really.
What do they do? Can you give us some examples?
Well, they build a sense of community over 3 or 4 days, and then there's a challenge offered to them. And that challenge is really well designed, and it's to give them the space to, I suppose, reflect back to when they actually mark that transition from boy to young man, because there's a ritual. There's actually a ritual as part of the challenge. And, of course, I can't give away what the challenge is. That would blow the whole thing. but it's really well designed, and I'm really a passionate supporter of it because I've seen it transform the lives of so many young boys.
In what way?
More importantly, it's transformed the lives of their fathers, because the dads come on thinking this will be really good for my son, but they leave with covered in campfire ash and burns and saying this is the best thing I've ever done. So it transformed the lives of the young men because they have a point of reflecting back to when I made that move from boy to young man.
Mm.
And more importantly, behaviour like unhealthy boy to healthy man. So they're in the company of really healthy men who are flawed. They're not perfect, but they have a real passion for this work, and the community, the sense of community that builds up over 3 to 5 days is phenomenal.
Yeah, terrific call. Thanks, Neil. And I think we've grabbed your number so we can follow up for more information.
Can I make
Thank
a
you. Daily Messenger,
that?
Yes.
Yeah. Why I want to get celebrants involved, because those wonderful innovations that Maggie mentioned and that last caller mentioned, the whole country needs this. I mean, there's a report out this very week where a third of young people have mental problems because of the challenges they face they're not coping with. And the country lacks this as a whole. And I don't know how we're going to do it, but I just think that someone, I spoke to Patrick McGorry about it and just said, how are we going to get this out as part of the culture? And that, to me, That's the important challenge. I mean, it's wonderful what these people are doing. I've been reading about it myself. But really, every young person needs it.
Let's come to Kate in South Australia. You did a ritual around your second pregnancy, I think.
Yeah, so it's a tradition that some women are following a little bit more commonly now. And it's kind of like a backlash against the regular baby shower where, we inundate women with presents and play funny games. This is more about the sacredness of your pregnancy. So women folk get together and they all bring a bead and a candle. And it's about sharing positive stories about birth and pregnancy. And at the what they call the blessing way, you make a necklace, and which is then you wear that necklace when you're in labour or early labour. And it's something that you can keep as a kind of token to the end of your pregnancy. And it's a really, really beautiful ceremony, something that kind of mentally prepares you for, getting into having a baby.
Kate, that's beautiful. Thank you so much.
No worries. Can you see again how powerful that symbolism is?
Mm.
And I think one of the things that happens in that is that we're having, what a ceremony is simplistically, is a ritualised demonstration of an intention of one or more humans, and that's the intention around that is just beautiful. And that's exactly what we, Dali and I are cheering loudly, I know, that saying this is actually transforms us as humans into more meaningful and more sort of grounded and present people. The modern world is all about stuff and consumerism, and I think we've lost the depth of who we are as humans, and this is what ceremony brings back out to us.
Speaking about transformation, let's come to Linda in Tasmania. Former divorce lawyer, you've got a take on divorce rituals.
Yes, I always encourage clients to, I did a lot of divorces, and often they're done by mail if there's no children, so there's no actual ceremony. There are so many ceremonies around marriage and the start of a relationship, and there just weren't any formal ones around the ending of a marriage and the start of that new chapter, not just for the individuals, the husband and wife, but for the children as well. It was very, very important. So I did get invited to quite a few, ranging from lunches to sort of ceremonies quite like a wedding, but celebrating a divorce with people and pews and all sorts of things. So over the years, people took great solace from it, and it was really a chance for them to move on.
Yeah, what a great role for a divorce lawyer to be playing that role. Thank you very much, Linda. I want to squeeze in Leah from Sydney as well. Good morning to you.
Hi.
You've got a son-in-law who has a ritual for his children each day.
Yes, he comes home every day and he says, what was the rose of your day? And what was the thorn of your day? And what was the banana peel of your day? Which is the funny thing that happened. And they all want to know from each other they want to know what his is and what my daughter's was. And this started, you know, one of the little grandsons is only two and he's just turned three and he really loves it, as well as the older daughter. But they've also got baby twins, and on Friday nights, we're a very secular family, a Jewish family, and he blesses his son and daughter, his sons and daughters at the table, and it's very lovely. And he's, you know, he's also very active in men's groups. He's done lots of training and he's been active in men's groups. So he's introduced all these new rituals to our family, which is very beautiful.
How terrific. Thank you very much, Leah. Very much. Now, look, we just want to squeeze in the last minute, if we can. We just couldn't resist. Because, of course, the ultimate ritual of all rituals at the moment is the great secular celebration of sport in many people's lives. And there's a certain ritual that's happening every night in a lot of homes across Australia at the moment, and that is the World Cup. Yes, indeed. And we are joined on the line from Brazil by Lloyd O'Hart. Good morning to you.
Hola, hola, Natasha, how are you?
I'm very well. Your second pilgrimage to the World Cup. Has this become a kind of ritual for you?
Well, sort of. I'd like it to become a somewhat permanent ritual. This is, as you say, only my second one, but, you know, with all the grace in the world, I'm hoping you go to a few.
Yes, indeed. Why is it important to you?
Oh, well, it's important for other things. I've been a lifelong passionate fan of football. And, of course, seeing it played on the world stage is arguably the ultimate goal. And, of course, watching it being played in places like Germany and Brazil is just a dream come true. So, you know, that's something I'm keen to do, if you can call it a ritual, I'd like to do for some time going forward.
So do you have any kind of your own personal rituals that you add to this pilgrimage that you make?
Oh, absolutely. I always try and ensure that I get out and about and, you know, sample the food and wine and the culture of the host cities where these World Cups are held. And certainly that's, in some respects, is almost as important as the football to me. So I'm certainly keen to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, but around you, I bet you there's some passionate rituals going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're always keen to sample the local wines and obviously just the food, as I was saying. So, you know, it's just, I think it's an important package, if you can call it that, for seeing the beautiful game in action.
Oh, look, thanks for joining us. We just couldn't resist. Lloyd O'Hart, enjoy the rest of the show, the ceremony. One more game for Australia with Spain, I guess. Good luck.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Speak to you soon.
Lloyd O'Hart joining us from Brazil, where the World Cup is perhaps happening, the ultimate secular ceremony. Final quick comments from our two guests today. Dally Messenger, civil celebrant, Maggie Dent, author and educator and parenting and resilience specialist. Dally, final thoughts from you, very briefly.
Well, the World Cup guy set me off on a couple of thoughts, and that is, I've got a friend who ties ribbons in his daughter's hair, then he goes to the aged people's home and he picks up his father and he takes him to the football and they dress in their clothes and they eat their special foods and they sing their special songs. And AFL in Melbourne's the classic example, rugby league in New South Wales, but that's one of the great rituals we celebrate.
Yes, indeed.
And
Maggie Dent.
Oh, I just think we need to know that these things can deepen and strengthen our relationships within our families and our communities, and that we need to really be brave enough to seek them out and do exactly some of the beautiful things that we've heard today.
Mm. And I will squeeze in this beautiful comment from Jonathan on the text message in South Australia. I'm a recovering addict in long-term recovery, and every year on August the 26th, I celebrate another year free of alcohol or other drugs. This event is just as important, or perhaps even more important, than my actual birthday. I celebrate it with friends, with a birthday cake and the number of candles corresponding to the number of years drug-free. Dally Messenger, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Great pleasure, Natasha. Thank you, and thank you, Maggie.
Maggie Dent, thank you too.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic calls. I think you'd all agree. You can keep the conversation going on our listener feedback line, 0283 1430. Thank you to Angela Owens, who produced today's program, studio engineer Michelle Watts, the team, EP Jane Shields, Tracy Tromf, Ian Coombe, Lindy Rain, Georgia Power. It's terrific having you this week. I'm not going yet, though, because I'm crossing now to Michael Cathcart, who is going to be celebrating the great ceremony of the solstice coming up, I guess. Have we got you, Michael? You're in Hobart.
I'm right here. It's the shortest day tomorrow. It's the longest night, and Hobart is embracing the moment when the darkness meets the light with Dark Mofo. It's a ritual. It's a new marvellous ritual.
It certainly is. It's a great sort of secular arts ritual, isn't it?
Last night I went to the Midnight Feast, the Winter Feast, and there's a great Ferris wheel that turns through the night like a sort of fairy apparition. There's a choir there singing to the darkness. There are great flames leaping up into the night. There are little children with their eyes wide with wonder. It's all marvellous. And we're having the most horrendous time.
What's so coming up then? What are you going to do in the next hour of this fantastic radio experience?
We're going to talk to the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra. We're going to talk to the director of Dark Mofo. We're going to find out what happens in the Tasmanian Museum and Art Gallery. We're going to find out what those enormous lights are, these searchlights that are sort of cutting through the sky above Hobart here. I've got a live audience here. They could all shout Natasha on the count of... Hello, Natasha. On the count of 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, unreal. Hey, have a great hour, all of you.
We're all very excited.
Have you celebrated the winter solstice before?
I've never given it a thought. Never before in my whole life. And now I can't think of anything else.
You're making up for it. Hey, Michael, have a great hour on the radio coming up after the news.
Good on you, Natasha.
And all of you too, maybe you can cheer us out.
Hooray!
Dark Mofo coming from Hobart, from Mona in Hobart, straight after the news. You have a great weekend. Love to hear your stories on our Facebook page. Natasha Mitchell, catch you Monday, hey? Bye. And then listen to this.
Radio. Tonic. Refresh your ears on Sundays. RN presents two innovative new programs.
Radio Tonic, a heady mix of fiction, essays and drama. 3 p.m.
And then listen to this. While Soundproof at 8 p.m. is a weekly portal into radio art, soundscapes and performance.
Take a closer listen. Radio Tonic and Soundproof. We're at the RN homepage.